Welcome back, Hemming Brainiacs, to the Hemming Brainiac-a-thon, the best podcast, full stop. We are talking about Book 2, Chapter 20. What are we talking about in particular? Oh, BYO discussion prompts. I didn't have any discussion prompts for you yesterday, which means, you probably know what that means by now, it means I need to read the Schmoop summary. So let's do that. Chapter 20. When the chapter goes over my head a little bit, I can't really think of a discussion prompt. Well, sometimes I'm just not really inspired by the chapter. I can't think of anything. But more often than not, when I say BYO, it's because I didn't really take in much of the chapter. So here we go. The Japanese vase. Julian goes to dinner feeling depressed because Matilda is ignoring him again. He spends his time observing the high-class people who come to dinner and reminds himself that Matilda has done things with him that she hasn't with them. Matilda comes to him in the library later that day and says she knows that he wants to speak to her. She tells him flat out that she no longer loves him. She follows this by unleashing a hurricane of insults on Julian, calling him a poor nobody. Julian tries to run away, but Matilda catches him by the arm and holds him. Later on, Julian is so preoccupied with his romantic drama that he knocks over a Japanese blue vase owned by Madame de la Mole. Matilda is delighted to see the blue vase break because she has always found it ugly. Julian says that he is sorry that the vase has been destroyed just like his heart, but no one knows what this second part means except for Matilda. Okay, so they've broken up and he's broken a vase. But in the breaking of the vase, Matilda is delighted. Let's see what happens for poor old Julian. Swims to the Mama Fish, he said, the epigram by Jean-Paul was a German romantic writer, best known for his humorous novels and stories. When I was reading reviews of translations, one reviewer remarked that Raphael's was the most humorous, I can see that, humorous lines. He spent the day trying to kill, by way of weariness, both himself and his horse. Julian attempted to argue himself back into favour. Nothing could be more absurd. Argue yourself out of being disliked. For proud, bold spirits, it is a short step from anger at themselves to anger at others. Wild fury is, in such cases, a lively pleasure. She had immense resources, especially in the art of torturing people's vanity and inflicting the most savage wounds. Julian found himself subjected to the workings of a superior mind, motivated by an extraordinary hatred, and entirely directed at him. He was unable to think of defending himself. Indeed, he began to share her burning contempt. Laura Weistich said, I'm wondering where the story is going from here. It's just been a back and forth of craziness for the last few chapters. Non-creative handles that agreed. Going back and forth between these two is a bit exhausting. It is a bit exhausting. It's kind of humorous, though, like, it's just the most volatile, immature infatuation that I've seen in any novel of these novels, of the Hemingway list novels. It is infatuation, and it's so volatile. It's on and off again, just on the drop of a hat, you know. Non-creative handle said, is this breaking the vase symbolic? Is it the beginning of the end for Mr. Julian? Could be the case, could be a turning point, although it's funny that Matilda likes that he broke the vase. You know, maybe that's significant, or maybe it's another example of Julian, no matter what happens, he lands on his feet. You know, he always has the Felix culpa, the fortunate fall,
that's weird.
Sorry, got distracted there. And whenever he does something like break a vase or get into a fight or get into a duel or anything that's a kind of a mistake, he ends up getting ahead because of that mistake. It's quite strange. The thing that I'm confused about is... I don't know what that is. The Podbean interface. So Podbean is the podcasting thing that I use, the podcasting host, they've obviously just upgraded their thing. I don't even know how to do it anymore. Wow. That's a spanner in my works. I don't even know how to upload a new episode anymore. They really changed things. Maybe I go to episodes, media, episode list. Okay. That's confusing. They've upgraded their whole interface, and it was just, I usually load it up while I'm talking, and I've done that, and it was just this whole new world. Anyway, you don't care about that. I barely even care about that. Let's not talk about anything. Let's read the next chapter. Chapter 21, The Secret Note. For I've seen all I tell you of, and if I might have been deceived in the seeing, most certainly I don't deceive you in recounting it. A letter to the author. The Marquis sent for him. Monsieur de la Mole seemed rejuvenated. His eye was sparkling. Let's talk a little about your memory, he said to Julien. It's said to be prodigious. Would you be capable of learning 4 pages by heart and then going to recite them in London, and that without changing a single word? The Marquis was distractedly rustling through the pages of that day's Quotidien, and unsuccessfully trying to conceal an air of great seriousness, like none Julien had seen him wear, even when the Frilair lawsuit was in question. Julien had by now enough worldly experience to realise that he should seem completely taken in by the light-hearted manner of the display. That issue of La Quotidienne isn't too amusing, perhaps, but by tomorrow morning, if Monsieur the Marquis allows me, I shall have the honour of reciting it to him. What, even the announcements? Most exactly, and without omitting a single word. Can you give me your word on that? Replied the Marquis with sudden gravity. Yes, monsieur, and only a fear of failing to keep it could affect my memory. It's merely that I forgot to ask you that question yesterday. I won't now ask you to swear never to repeat what you're about to hear. I know you too well to insult you so. I've already vouched for you, and I'm going to take you to a salon where 12 gentlemen meet. You'll be taking notes on what each of them has to say. Don't be alarmed, it won't be just a confused conversation. Everyone will speak in his turn. I don't mean to say in good order, added the Marquis, reviving his natural light and witty tone. While we're talking, you will scribble down 20 pages or so. You will come back here with me, and you will reduce those 20 pages to 4, and those are the 4 pages you will recite to me tomorrow morning instead of a whole number of La Quotidienne. Then immediately you'll be off, and you will have to travel by post like a young man in pursuit of his pleasures. Your aim will be to go unnoticed by anybody. Then you'll find yourself at the side of the great personage. There, more skill will be required. It's a question of deceiving everybody surrounding him, since among his secretaries, among his servants, are people in the pay of our enemies, lying in wait to intercept our agents as they pass. You will carry with you an unobtrusive letter of his recommendation. The very moment His Excellency looks at you, you will draw out my watch, this one you see here, that I will lend you for the journey. Take it with you now, that's so much done anyway, and give me yours. The Duke himself will condescend to take down at your dictation the 4 pages you will have by heart. That done, but not before, note that well, you may, if His Excellency asks you, tell him about the meeting you are about to attend. One thing that might prevent you being bored during your journey is that between Paris and the minister's place there are people who would like nothing better than to take a shot at Monsieur the Abbé Sorel. Then, well, his mission is over, and I predict a long wait for, my dear fellow, how will we know you are dead? Your zeal couldn't stretch that imparting that. Run along now quickly and buy yourself a complete outfit, continued the Marquis, serious again. Dress in the fashion of about 2 years ago. This evening you should appear a trifle unsmart. On the journey, on the other hand, you will be as usual. Does this surprise you? Does your suspicious mind see the point? Yes, my friend. One of the revered personages whose opinions you're going to hear is fully capable of sending on information by means of which, at some excellent inn where you've ordered supper one evening, you might well be served a dose of opium, or worse. It would be best, said Julian, to go 30 leagues round about, not taking the direct way. This concerns Rome, I suppose. The Marquis took on an air of displeased hauteur that Julian had not seen so pronounced since Bray-le-Haut. You'll learn that, monsieur, when I judge it appropriate to tell you I don't care for questions. Oh, it wasn't one, I do assure you, monsieur. I was thinking out loud, replied Julian effusively. I was searching my mind for the safest route. Yes, it seems your mind was indeed far away. Never forget that an ambassador, and especially one of your age, should never seem to force a confidence. Julian was mortified. He was in the wrong. His pride looked for an excuse, but could find none. Then learn from this, added Monsieur de la Mole, that a man always gets emotional when he has made some stupid mistake. An hour later, Julian was in the Marquis' anteroom in the guise of an inferior, with outmoded coat, a cravat of only doubtful whiteness, and something of the pretentious little cad in his whole appearance. On seeing him, the Marquis burst out laughing, and only then was Julian properly vindicated. If this youngster should let me down, said the Marquis to himself, whom could I trust? Yet, when it comes to the point, one has to trust someone. My son and his brilliant friends of the same vein have courage and loyalty enough for 100,000. If it came to a fight, they'd perish on the steps of the throne. And they do know how to do things, except in what's needed just now. Devil take me, if I can see one among them who would be able to learn 4 pages by heart and travel 100 leagues without being detected. Norbert knows how to die, as his ancestors have died, but that's a conscript's virtue too. The Marquis sank into a deep reverie, and even in getting killed, said he with a sigh, maybe this Sorel would know how to behave just as well as him. Let's get in the carriage, said the Marquis, as if banishing untimely thoughts. Monsieur, said Julian, while my costume here was being got ready, I learned the first page of today's quotidien by heart. The Marquis took the paper. Julian recited it without getting a single word wrong. Good, said the Marquis, very much the diplomat that evening. All this time the young fellow isn't noticing what streets we're going through. They arrived in a large salon of rather dreary aspect, part panelled and part hung with green velour. In the middle of the room, a scowling footman, and he had just installed a dining table, which he then transformed into a work table by means of a huge cloth. The detritus of some ministry or other, all stained with ink. The master of the house was an enormous man whose name was never mentioned. Julian thought he had the look and easy address of a man who would put up with much. At a sign from the Marquis, Julian remained at the lower end of the table. There, to put a face on things, he set about sharpening some quills. Out of the corner of his eye, he counted 7 men, talking, though he saw them only from the back. 2 seemed to address Monsieur de la Mole as an equal, the others with more or less deference. A new personage entered without being announced. It is most peculiar, thought Julian, that nobody is announcing in this salon. Is this a precaution taken in my honour? Everyone rose to receive the newcomer. He wore the same extremely distinguished decoration as 2 or 3 of those already in the salon. They were conversing in low tones. In assessing the newcomer, Julian was reduced to what he could glean from his features and dress. He was short and stout, with a high colour, a gleaming eye, and no expression other than the wicked flicker of a wild boar. Julian's attention was abruptly diverted by the arrival almost immediately afterwards of a wholly different personage. This was a very tall and thin man wearing 2 or 3 waistcoats. His glance was kindly, his manner courteous. That's so like the Bishop of Bezacon's style, thought Julian. This man evidently belongs to the church. He doesn't seem more than 50 or 55, and it would be impossible to look more paternal. The young Bishop of Agde appeared and seemed astonished when, looking around at the company, his eye fell on Julian. They had not exchanged a word since the ceremony at Bray-le-Haut. This look of surprise embarrassed and irritated Julian. What then, said he to himself, will possessing an acquaintance with someone always fall out of my disadvantage? All these grand seigneurs whom I've never set eyes on before don't intimidate me in the least. And then that young bishop's glance freezes me. It has to be admitted I am a very peculiar kind of person, and most unfortunate. Soon, a little man, very dark, came in with much fuss and bother, and commenced talking as soon as he was inside the door. He had a yellowish complexion and a rather wild air. From the moment of his remorseless talker's entry, groups began to form, seemingly to avoid the tedium of having to listen to him. Moving away from the fireplace, they started to drift down to the bottom of the table where Julian was established. His air became more and more flustered, for in the end, try as he might, he could not help but hear them, and even with his slight experience, understand the importance of what they so openly discussed, and also how much these grandees, now before his eyes, should have ensured that it remained secret. Already working as slowly as possible, Julian had sharpened 20 quills. This resource now failed him. He vainly looked to Monsieur de la Mole's eye for an instruction. The Marquis had forgotten him. "What I'm doing is absurd," said Julian, sharpening his quills, "but men with such commonplace-seeming physiognomies, who entrust themselves, or are entrusted by others, with such great matters, must be very much on edge. My look, unfortunately, has in it something questioning and a little disrespectful that would doubtless annoy them. If I lower my eyes markedly, it will look as though I am storing up what they say." His embarrassment was extreme. He was hearing some singular things. And that is the end of that chapter. Cool. Okay. I suppose that happened. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.